By the time Glenn Kurtz graduated as a guitar major from the New England Conservatory of Music, he was all ready to realize his childhood dream of a big concert career. He'd shown at guitar camp for years. He'd played with Dizzy Gillespie, even appeared in the Merv Griffin show. But in the end, the dream wasn't viable. Glenn Kurtz closed his guitar case, and his life went in another direction. After many years, he picked up his guitar once again, and he rediscovered the joys of music. Now, he practices every day. In fact, practice has come to mean so much to him, he's written a book about it. It's called Practicing, A Musician's Return to Music. Steve Paulson asked Glenn Kurtz to bring his guitar with him when they talked.
Is there a difference between just playing informally by yourself and practicing?
Sure, I think there is. I mean, playing, you're just letting yourself play, and you fool around, you do whatever you want, and in a way you take all of the pressure off of yourself. That's what makes it so much fun. You don't care really whether you do a bad job or a good job, you're just enjoying yourself. Practicing is a very focused kind of attention. You're very, very consciously trying to make yourself better. So you're listening very intently for the slightest flaws in your playing, or you're watching very intensely for the slightest wobbling in the muscles of your hands or in your attention, your concentration. You're really trying to rehearse what it means to play music with all of yourself.
So when you practice, how do you begin?
Well, the first thing, of course, is I tune the instrument. And on humid days in New York, sometimes that can take quite a while. And then I loosen up my hands. First, I do a series of exercises for my right hand, and then a series for my left hand, and then a couple that make them work together in different combinations so that, you know, all the connections get made and everything starts working together.
So you have to warm up the body for it to perform.
Sure,
correctly.
It's a very physical thing, of course. It's like being an athlete, except it's concentrated in your hands.
So what is the goal of practice? Is it to hone your technical skill or just to try to keep it at the level where it has been? Or is it to learn new techniques? So what are you trying to do here?
Well, it's all of the above. For the vast majority of musicians, I think it's always to improve your technique. Maybe there are some people whose technique is already so perfect that all they need to really do is maintain it. But I don't think that that's really the case. I mean, and technique doesn't exist independently. I mean, it does in some sense if you're playing scales. But the purpose of technique is to allow you to play music the way you want to. And so there's always refinements in how you play that you're trying to achieve, because you hear something differently, or you hear a nuance, or you want to create an effect that requires something of you that maybe you didn't know how to do. So depending on what you're working on, sometimes you just do technique to warm up, sometimes you do technique to address a problem that's crept in, and sometimes you do technique in a very specific way to try and learn a new way of moving or create a new kind of effect with your playing.
And what about the guitar itself? Can that change throughout a session of practicing?
Sure, it does. Any instrument, especially a wooden instrument. But even, I think, even electronic instruments, they are very responsive to the body, to the warmth of the body, to being played over a long period of time, particularly a guitar and violins. Any wooden instrument that's very finely balanced is very, very sensitive to humidity and air pressure. So over the course of any practice session, the instrument itself changes tremendously.
That suggests that the guitar itself could have a bad day.
It does, of course. And it's very much like another person. You both have moods when you sit down together, and you have to approach each other cautiously and get to know what's happening and where you're both at, and hopefully you find some common ground in which to work.
It's so interesting hearing you describe all of this, because clearly you take great pleasure in this whole process, the whole business of getting warmed up and then just feeling the instrument in your hand and playing and showing mastery, which I'm just thinking about my own kids who, you know, when they have to practice playing the piano, it's, you know, anything but fun. But it makes one wonder how you get from there to here.
I don't remember ever disliking practicing, although I probably didn't really start practicing until somewhat later. I just loved playing, and that was what I did, and that was what I did instead of practicing for many years. But yeah, it's a great pleasure and a great misery. And yet somehow the challenges of it, emotional challenges, the physical challenges, to say nothing of just the musical challenges, it's a tremendous delight. It demands so much of you, of me, of my intelligence and my sensitivity and my ear and my physicality, and to get them all working together. Yeah, it's just the greatest feeling there is.
You have a passage in your book where you talk about practicing and how that's different from performing. Could you read that?
Sure. Yeah, this is towards the end of the book, in my practice session when I'm just finishing and I perform a piece of music. And this is right when I've done. I sit with the final notes, feeling the surprising shape of this music. I've given everything I can give now, a performance. Perhaps I am my only audience today, and my attention alone makes this a performance and not just playing in my room. But attention changes everything. I have to laugh and wonder. I've found a new story of practicing, though it's not the one I expected when I sat down this morning. Practicing, I might repeat a note, a section, a whole piece, 100 times, as if I had all the time in the world to play. This bit of pretending allows me to escape the urgency of each instant and improve slowly. Yet each instant is urgent, and in the end, practicing is a lie. It's a necessary lie. A fiction that suspends time so we may examine and reflect on what we do or who we are, but still alive. Music lives only in performance. Only then does what we hear become real. Performing reveals everything we are able to show, and yet for this reason, the first time through, we often perform badly. And we yearn so deeply to go back again and correct our mistakes. Few yearnings are as profound in us, because the truth is, we cannot go back. Yet the fiction of practicing makes it seem as if we can, and this is enough to change our lives. Practice lets us grow in our own time, protected from the demands, the vitality and mortality of each moment. Within the practice room walls, it often seems as if time really does stand still, as if we could always remain protected, practicing, and improving forever. This illusion holds transformative power, but also a dangerous seduction. Practice, by itself, is a dream of perfection. Only performing can turn practice into shared life, where our own time may join with others, becoming musical. Yet practicing is the necessary lie that lets us pause to collect ourselves. It's the inner life of performance, the inward turn that allows us to develop, to grow, to move forward having learned.
Oh, it's a wonderful passage. And it raises some rather obvious questions. It suggests that the whole point of practicing is so that you will perform.
I think that that's true. I mean, I think whether you perform for yourself, as I am in this passage, or whether you're doing your debut at Carnegie Hall, I think that practice alone can become a very sterile thing. And it makes you think that you can, like I say in this passage, you can remain protected, improving forever, stopping time somehow, and not changing. But I think even if you're alone, if you never step in front of another person, at some point you want to take what you've practiced and try and do it for real. And that sense of doing it for real is a completely different feeling than practicing, where you feel like it's sort of tentative, or you're putting it together, or you're trying it out. But when you really put all of yourself in it, that becomes a performance naturally. And I think that we all do that. It doesn't matter whether we're playing an instrument or, you know, whether you're learning to cook. There are times when it's for real. And that's when, yeah, that's when real life happens.
Is this partly a story about aging? I mean, could you only have come to this point being as old as you are right now?
My august age. I think so. I mean, I think in some sense it is. And maybe not aging per se, but maturing, certainly. I think in many ways the story is about getting over myself as a child. And it happened that I was relatively precocious and I had some success. And I conceived this ideal for myself that built upon that success. And it turned out to be unsustainable, as so many childhood dreams are. And yeah, the fact that it was a childhood dream didn't make it any less painful to lose. But I had to come back to it later. I mean, this can happen to you when you're 12 years old. It can happen to you when you're 70. It's about facing what a loss has meant to you and coming back to it. This idea of returning seems to me so central. And I think it's central to practicing, what practicing is, because you're striving every day for something that maybe you won't achieve. And it's possible to leave the practice room every single day feeling like you failed. And yet, you come back the next day. And you try again. And I think that there's something about that process of returning, of facing yourself realistically, even if you haven't lived up to your own ideals, and trying again. That's, in some way, that's almost the definition of maturity.
Glenn Kurtz is the author of Practicing, A Musician's Return to Music. He talked with Steve Paulson.